Hi, welcome to the Travel Advice Show. Today is June 9th, 2008, and I'm Chris Newton, one of the co-hosts. And you can check out all our shows at TravelAdviceShow.com and email us at show@TravelAdviceShow.com. I'd like to introduce my great co-host, Jerry Fuller. Would you like to introduce our topic today and our guest today, Jerry?
I am thrilled and super excited about doing it because, number one, it's about a destination that I rank in the top five in the entire world. And we're having, again, as our guest, Janet Moore, founder of Distance Horizons, a magnificent company that does travel the way it should be done. And welcome, Janet. We'd love to have you back.
Thank you, and thank you very much for that kind introduction.
Yeah, welcome. Yeah.
Hi.
I want to start out, first of all, and I already said that I think Ethiopia is in the top five best countries in the world to visit. Do you feel that way, or at least in the top 10?
Yes, I absolutely do, and it's one of those countries that sadly has not received the kind of exposure I think that it should have when it comes down to its attractions for the traveler. I mean, I think a lot of our images of Ethiopia have been formed by the horrible famines that they have been through, and perhaps more recently, you know, with the political conflict between Ethiopia and Eritrea. But in terms of what it offers the interested travelers, it's magnificent as a country, absolutely magnificent.
I know. You want to start out, first of all, to let our clients and listeners know where Ethiopia is?
Oh, yeah. Well, Ethiopia is obviously it's part of Africa. It's on sort of the eastern tip. It borders Sudan, Kenya, Somalia, and Eritrea. And then right across, it's at the very close to the Red Sea, but it doesn't actually have access to water, which is one of the reasons for part of the conflicts between Ethiopia and Eritrea. But it's just very, very close to Yemen and Saudi Arabia, which kind of places it, interestingly, from a historical point of view and the various influences that it has been exposed to in its long and rich history.
Mm-hmm. And I guess we should get this out of the way real quickly before you start talking about the magnificent things to do and experience. What time of year do you think is the best time to go?
I mean, there are different times that you can go. A lot of people like to go in January because of the New Year festival that is a very important part of Ethiopia's life. We, funnily enough, tend not to organize our trips there at that particular time just because we find that the facilities are very crowded, and it makes it a little more difficult to travel around the country and stay. There we can talk a little bit more about the infrastructure later on, but there are a limited number of hotels in each city, and obviously we want to be housing our travelers in the most comfortable location. So our trips tend to go in the fall, right after the rainy season. So we're looking at sort of mid-October. And so any time really between mid-October and January and February are lovely times to go.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk a little bit, because you mentioned it already, a little bit about the safety. The image of it is maybe it may not be safe, but you want to talk just a moment about, is it safe to go there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, very, very safe to go there. There have been periods where the conflict with Eritrea has sort of dominated the news more strongly, but in terms of running a tour through Ethiopia or visiting Ethiopia even independently, I have absolutely no concerns whatsoever. I think perhaps it was the year 1999, I want to say 1999, when things were heating up a little bit. And I remember we had a group there, and I was working with the American embassy. It was a wonderful ambassador at that time. And I remember him saying to me, Janet, I think they shouldn't go to Aksum. Aksum obviously is an important part of any itinerary in Ethiopia. And Aksum is the, you know, quite far to the north and therefore quite close to the border with Eritrea. But that's the only time that we've actually changed the program because of a, you know, political uncertainty. And again, I think the chances of anything happening to the group would have been minimal, but they would have been exposed to possible border skirmishes, and so we decided that they wouldn't go up to that northerly point. But in terms of going today, we've had several groups who went last year, not a problem to pretty much go anywhere in the country.
Right. Well, let's start a little bit at the reason people should go and do go to Ethiopia, and I think probably the beginning would be the history of it. Because the history plays a major part in today's Ethiopia, and it makes it colorful, exciting, and very much alive. Would you want to expound a bit about Ethiopia's history and why it influences why you want to go?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things that that people don't realize when they think of Ethiopia, first of all, there are three religions that have sort of have had a major impact on the history of the country. But interestingly enough, Christianity came to Ethiopia very early. I mean, in about 300 A.D. And it said, whether this is true or not, but it said that a boat that was coming back from Syria decided to stop in Ethiopia to replenish its supplies, and that is how Christianity entered the country and took off, very quickly. And a lot of the churches that you see in Ethiopia date back to that period. And certainly by the end of the 5th century, Christianity has taken a very strong hold over the country. And this arrival of Christianity was a major turning point in Ethiopian history and has had an enormous influence on the country. I think not just the spiritual and intellectual life, but also the art and the culture that you see in the country even today. But the other religion that has played an important role is Islam. And it is said that, well, Islam came, I think, to Ethiopia in about, I think I'm going to say 610 A.D., and apparently the prophet actually sent his daughter and son-in-law to Ethiopia because they were facing persecution in Arabia. So that sort of brought the link between Islam and Ethiopia and sort of firmly placed Islam in the country of Ethiopia. And of course, at that time, Christianity was a strong influence. So you have these two religions, and interestingly enough, they coexisted peacefully at that particular point in time. And, you know, even today, you can go to a city that is east of Addis. It's called Harar. It's not included in a lot of programs, but we feel it is absolutely essential to include because Harar remains the Islamic stronghold in Ethiopia. And as I say, Christianity is still an important religion. In fact, when you sort of break down the religions, I believe the percentages are about, 48% Christian, 48% Islam, Muslims, and then there are very few Jews left, but there are some Jews left still in Ethiopia. Most of them have gone and returned to Israel. But so those are sort of the three religions that have played an important role in Ethiopia's history.
Another thing that I find really interesting is, I don't know how to put it in too many words, but basically you still have a very strong African black culture that has been in existence for thousands of years, and you still have, like in Addis, for example, when Italy owned the country, basically, you have the influence of Italy, and you have the modern and you have the old in Ethiopia, and that's one thing that I really love about it.
Yeah, no, you definitely do. I mean, I think, what I've seen in the last 10 years is, Ethiopians sort of valuing both sides. I mean, the historical and the present. And, for example, one of the places that we always take our travelers to, it's a gallery in Addis. It's called the Osni Gallery. And it's actually run by the daughter-in-law of Richard Pankhurst, Richard Pankhurst being one of the major social historians on Ethiopia who is spent most of his life in Ethiopia. And his daughter-in-law runs this very interesting gallery because she's sort of bringing together the old and the new. So it's located in a traditional building, which she has renovated. And what she displays in the gallery is contemporary Ethiopian art. But you know, when we take a group there, they will enjoy the art. They will listen to her talk about it. They will have sort of a presentation on old Addis and how it looked 200 years ago. But at the same time, they're getting exposed to some of the contemporary art that is actually a very good quality that is shown at the gallery.
I know. Let's spend a little bit about. If you were going to go the first time to Ethiopia and you wanted a good overview, how long would you stay and where would you go?
I mean, I think, you know, and this is
it's a hard question, isn't it?
Yeah. No, it is.
Because you need to keep going back because there's so many things. When you go over there, you find out, you know, I should have done this, and then you didn't because you didn't know about it.
Right. I mean, I, in my mind, I sort of think about Ethiopia in, you know, two halves, like the northern half and the southern half, and they offer
right.
two very different experiences. So we tend to focus on, you know, the northern part of the country, which is the part of the country that is that least fits people's image of what Ethiopia is like. Again, you know, we go back to the 1970s, the famine, and when we saw those, you know, horribly tragic pictures of the famine in Ethiopia, those were pretty much all shot in the southern part of the country. The southern part is the dry part of the country. It's where the tribal groups are, and it's where the facilities are probably less developed. The roads are less good. The hotels are less good. But it offers a sort of insight into the very important different tribal groups that exist in Ethiopia. If you take the northern part of the country, and that's if you're going for the first time and you do have a limited period of time, that's probably where I would recommend focusing. You're looking at a very, very different landscape. First of all, I mean, a lot of this is highlands. These are, when I say highlands, I'm talking about cities that are at heights of over, you know, 6,000 feet. We're talking, I mean, what we do, and it's sort of, you know, a cultural circle, as it were, and literally it's almost run that way because it's a reasonably large country, so you do fly from one city to another, and this plane basically it starts off in Addis in the morning, and then it makes various stops. It usually goes, I mean, as I say, we do always include Harar first, and that's something that's a little unusual, but to us that's very important because it is essential that you understand the importance of Islam in the country. So we start in Harar, and then we fly north to Lake Tana, to Bahar Dar,
mm-hmm.
and see the Tisisat Falls, which are the, you know, part of the Blue Nile and an extraordinary and magnificent natural landscape to enjoy. And then there are a number of churches that are actually built on small mm-hmm. islands in Lake Tana. So you would be mm-hmm. take a boat across the lake. And then we go to Gondar, which was important when the Italians were in Ethiopia. Interesting point that the Italians were in Ethiopia. No matter where you are in Ethiopia, it's almost always easy. If you don't know what you want to eat, basically everyone can cook a good pasta. And when I say good pasta dish, I mean a really good pasta dish, which, of course, is entirely different from traditional Ethiopian food, which was also sample. But it's interesting that legacy is still there of pasta. I remember being in a very remote part of the Simien National Park and, you know, just being desperately hungry and stopping at this roadside cafe and mm-hmm. having one of the most delicious pasta sauces made from fresh tomatoes that I'd ever had. You know, one of the things you don't expect to have in Ethiopia. But, I know, but so basically we go to Gondar and Gondar is important, you know, a number of interesting castles and palaces built there and an extraordinarily beautiful church in Gondar too. I mean, there are several churches, but one of them with a particularly fine art that's shown there, and many of these churches are full of these beautiful Christian paintings, very, very stylized. I mean, you can basically recognize an Ethiopian painting immediately when you see it. But it's one of those things where you may see, and a lot of them are just faces of angels. And there may be 500 on a wall of these, you know, all what appear to be identical looking faces. And then when you look closely at these paintings, you see that each face is just a little bit different, a slightly different expression, a slightly different shape of the eye or the nose. Quite extraordinary. And then we go north to Aksum, which of course, is important. It is said to be the home of the Ark of the Covenant, the original, container of the Ten Commandments, and also very interesting historical stelae that are located in the town. And then we go south to Gondar, which is where, to Lalibela, where the wonderful rock-hewn churches are located. And I'm sure most people have images of those extraordinary churches that were literally carved out of rock and are underground. So that's sort of the circle. I did miss out the extraordinary Simeon Mountains, which lie between Gondar and Aksum. And, you know, a new lodge has just opened up. We have not in past years actually spent an overnight in the Simeon Mountains because, not because we didn't want to, because it is absolutely beautiful. I mean, just these jagged green peaks with little villages, you know, clinging to the hillsides. But this new lodge that has just opened is absolutely beautiful. And it's run actually by a British man, and he has really, you know, made an effort to sort of, you know, build this lodge using traditional materials. The Ethiopians have built it, and he's trying to say, look, come and stay in the Simeon National Park. There are fantastic walks that you can do. There's gorgeous wildlife, beautiful bird life. You know, come in and we will show you the Simeon Mountains. And so finally now there's an opportunity to do this and stay in a comfortable lodge. It is the altitude is reasonably high, and I can't remember exactly. I can look this up, but I think it's about 11,000. I want to say 11,000 feet, a little bit higher. So there is some altitude adjustment that one has to go through, which is why we wouldn't take anyone there right away to spend the night. But then, you know, it, as one gets used to this, it is just an amazing place to spend time in. And the fact that you can now spend a night there really, I think, improves the opportunities for enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I know. You covered everything in the northern part. And how long would you stay doing all of that, including one or two nights in the Simeon? How long would you recommend?
I mean, I would say, you're looking at, let's say, three nights in Addis, two in Harar, two in Bahar Dar, seven, two in Gondar, 9, 10, 11, 12. I mean, you're looking at between a 12 and 14 night program.
Right.
For the northern part.
Right. And if you were going to the southern part, and you mentioned why you don't really recommend it to most people, at least your first visit. How much time would you spend down there, do you think?
You know, that...
Because it is very different.
It is very different, and, you know, the distances are you know, reasonably large between the two between the various places. And it really depends, you know, how... I mean, do you really want to get off the beaten track and see some of the tribal groups that aren't, you know, as well-visited by other companies? But I would say you're probably looking, if you're looking at the south... I mean, we have done programs that are four nights long. That, to me, is probably not long enough. I mean, I think you're looking at between, I'm going to say, between 6 and 8 nights to really do justice and you know... meet some of the tribal groups that are not on the normal tour path, because I do think it's important to get away from that and as much as you can. But, I mean, you need to do the southern part, understanding that the hotels, the vehicles are just not of the same quality that you get in the north. They get worn out very quickly, very quickly.
Because of the horrible roads.
Horrible roads, and, you know, when someone gets a new vehicle, they don't want to take it to the south. Because it gets destroyed so quickly, so you end up sadly with inferior vehicles that are driving in the southern parts.
Mm-hmm. Hey Janet,
go ahead.
Oh, okay, Janet, you know, when you travel around Ethiopia, is it purely people who speak English? Is it pretty easy to get around with English, or do they, like Italian or the native language there?
you know, I mean, they definitely have, there is English is not the main language. I mean,
right.
They obviously have their own language. And I would say, you know, it's reasonably easy to get around.
Really?
I would not use the word easy, though.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the path that I just described is pretty much, you know, there are hotels at each of those places. Obviously, the staff in the hotel speak reasonable English, but there are definitely limited facilities, you know, north and south.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, in Addis Ababa, there is a Sheraton Luxury Collection hotel, not just a Sheraton property, but it's part of their luxury collection.
Oh.
And it is a beautiful hotel. It has very high occupancy rates, indeed. You basically have two choices in Addis. You either stay at the Sheraton or you stay at the Hilton. Hilton has been there a lot longer. It's a lovely hotel, though, too. Either is perfectly fine. Once you get out of Addis, in both north and south, you're pretty much looking at government properties. And particularly in the north, they're perfectly okay. They all have private bathrooms. They all have, you know, flushing toilets. They all have, apparently and supposedly, hot and cold water. Sometimes you don't get hot water. One of the things that we always warn travelers going to Ethiopia is electricity is a premium, and it's not something that you can take for granted. So a lot of the hotels, in order to conserve electricity, will only offer it in the morning and in the evening hours. I mean, like, say, from 7 to 9 when you're getting ready, and then in the evening from 6 to 8, you will have electricity, which you will have hot water. But they're pretty good about telling you, what those hours are. So it's perfectly possible to plan your day based on, you know, I'm going to have my shower when there is hot water in the morning. But I think it's not the kind of country that you can go to with high expectations of luxury. I mean, you absolutely cannot. Sure, you can get that at the Sheraton, at the Hilton. That's about the only city that you will be able to feel that you're having any sort of luxury. And, you know, quite frankly, I think that if you were to have luxurious properties in the other parts of the country, it would feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It'd ruin it, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Ethiopia is a poor country. I mean, it is amongst the poorest countries in the world. And one of the other things that I think it's important to understand is you will be exposed to enormous poverty, and that may not be everybody's cup of tea to see that. There is a lot of begging in Ethiopia. One of the things that I have been working at, actually, with the tourism minister in Addis, is somehow trying to organize both the begging and the selling of souvenirs so that it doesn't impact on one's, you know, enjoyment of these tourist sites. I mean, in my opinion, there is nothing worse than, you know, being in one of the rock-hewn churches and being mobbed by people who were either trying to sell you, you know, silver crosses or begging. I mean, that absolutely, you know, that has a place, and one should be able to buy, you know, beautifully crafted souvenirs. But, you know, that should be organized, in my opinion. And that's something, as we all know, any country that's, introducing tourism and is looking towards tourism as a source of revenue, they need to address that question, in my opinion. And that hasn't necessarily been successfully addressed everywhere in Ethiopia. So it is important that some travelers understand you will be exposed to people selling you things when you don't necessarily want it, and you will be exposed to people begging.
Mm-hmm.
And how you deal with that is something that, you know, each individual needs to work out.
Well, one thing before we go, I do want to talk about the Omo River and some other rivers down there, because whitewater rafted the Omo, and I tell you, having whitewater rafted all over the world and kayaked, but I will tell you that it is probably one of the most spectacular whitewater raft trips in the world.
Wow.
Because you drop, like, in just but you drop 6,000 feet in a few hundred miles, and it is, or less, maybe it's 50 miles, but you drop, and it's phenomenal. Plus, there are two higher and a lower level that you can either do a like a 1 week trip on either or a 3 week trip on both. And basically, the lower part is where you see so many tribes and you see hippos in the water and monkeys on the cliffs, baboons, and it is absolutely one of the most fabulous experiences. And mainly depending on the time of year, but it averages maybe Cat 3 and 4. So you get a wonderful ride, but there's a lot of pools, a lot of calm areas, so it's magnificent. If you're into whitewater rafting, you must do the Omo. And they usually do that like, I don't know, November, December, January, that type of time. And
is it well organized, Barry? I mean, is it?
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Oh, it is very organized. They pick you up in Addis, and they drive you down. And, I mean, you're talking about horrible roads up and around. And then, oh, yes. In fact, the company that I went on is from Scotland, headquartered in Scotland. And so it's very, very organized. It's just like doing the Grand Canyon on the Colorado River or any of the other rivers in Europe. They take care of the food, the tents, everything else. It's just very convenient, but it is absolutely terrifying many times going through some of those rapids because they're steep, deep canyons. And you will swim. And the experience, the scenery, the mountains are like the Simien sort of, really jagged and big, deep canyons, just like going to the Grand Canyon. Maybe not quite as high mountain, but a high cliff, but same feeling. And then you've got the small calm areas where you've got the, as I mentioned, the hippopotamus and other different animals and birds. And so you get the African safari type of a feel, but via water, like going down the Zambezi or something on that nature in a raft. So you get the combination of everything. So I recommend it tremendously. And it's very safe as far as any river, white water in Cat 3 and 4 is safe. But the people that do it, most of the companies, know what they're doing. And so I really recommend it. But as we've discussed, Ethiopia has something for almost everybody. And as I said, it's in the top 5 best countries in the world. I've been there more than 30 times and absolutely love it.
That's incredible that you've been 30 times. So that speaks for itself, right? I've
been going to Ethiopia since the 1960s.
Wow.
And late 60s. And can't wait to go back. I mean, I'm no sooner to get back than I want to plan another trip. But, Janet, we thank you so very, very much being on this program with us again.
An absolute pleasure, and thanks for sharing the Omo River. I've always wanted to do that, so it's lovely to actually hear a description of it. Thank you, Jerry.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I mean, if you decide to do it, I don't know that I would want to take the 2.5 week one or maybe up to 3 week, because it's a long time to be in a boat.
Yes.
But in a raft, but the upper and the lower are very different. They're just like the north and the south of the country is different. Are different, and you decide which you want to do. If you want beautiful scenery, more beautiful scenery, and rugged and all that, it's hard to say, but I would probably do the upper. And if you want more animals, like hippopotami and all that, then you probably want to do the lower.
Right.
That's probably the differences. It's not quite as rugged, and it's really run, but it's fabulous. No matter which part you did, you would never regret it. But thanks again, Janet. We'll have to have you back again.
And look forward to chatting again.
That sounds good.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
All right, hey.
Oh, Janet, how do you get a hold of you?
Oh, yeah. Do you want to mention your website, Janet?
Oh, yes,
hey, everybody?
Of course. I'm sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's, the name of the company is Distant Horizons, and our website is www.distant-horizons.com.
All right.
Very good.
Okay.
Well, thanks again.
Okay, yeah, thanks, Janet.
My pleasure.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.